Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. My special guest today is John Franklin. John Franklin's an old friend. He's, like myself, a student of military history, and he's had quite a lot of experiences in the ET and especially the military project category. So without any further ado, John Franklin, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Thanks, James. You know, I've been a paying subscriber to your service for quite some time, and you spend the time to communicate with me, and I really appreciate that because I take great value in getting an email back from you. And you've been trying to get me on your show, and there's reasons why I have been a little reluctant, but I said, what the heck? And so trust me when I say it's a super honor to be on your show. Because, I mean, I've listened to others out there, but I feel that you're kind of like a center point, and you're also a magnet for the truth. And the people out there who have not been exposed to the compendium of guests that you've had on your show, they are missing out. I mean, truly, they are. And if you're not paying for hour two, and I'm not telling anybody that I'm not pitching that you got to pay for hour two, but I'm telling you that the value will be there if you do. You will hear things that people open up about that is so incredible. And I'm not throwing names out there, but take, for instance, like a Lyndon Moulton Howe or a Richard Dolan. Both of those people have put their time and effort in there. Your show is attracting a different sort of information stream. So everybody out there, if you want to recommend something, recommend James' show to people because it's a true treasure trove of information. And God bless you, James.
Thank you, John. I really appreciate that. We do make an earnest effort in the recent past. Most recent guest, Christy Campbell, she had a lot of interesting things to say in part two that I resonated with. And Ryan Wood, of course, the son part of the father and son team, Robert Wood and Ryan Wood. We had a part two discussion about all these things, crash retrieval related and what have you. We really delved into it. So yeah, I really encourage people plug into that because you'll get a lot of content. It's a lot of people, understandably, they don't really want to open up about certain things in public section for fear of retaliation and fear of ridicule.
Who was your recent guest that has that, or the website he's sharing his footage on? Is it UFOs over New York?
Yes, Jeff Brady, a brilliant guy.
Brady, correct. I don't think I've ever seen anything footage-wise more incredible than what that guy has.
Well, if you look at the craft, you know, the tumbling nature of some of these platforms, right? I mean, what earthly manufacturing company is going to make something so seemingly inherently unstable? And that,
right.
I mean, how could you use it as any kind of surveillance observation platform, right? So to me, that militates against it being man-made from these aerospace corporations. And that delves into the whole crash retrieval back engineering thing. I'm satisfied that a lot of the video that Jeff has, that depicts alien or at any rate, non-human activity.
I would agree. And I don't want to just say one little tidbit of detail that's coming off it, but I've never seen the hue or really the light emanation of when you watch it with your eye. If you people are hearing us speak and they haven't seen it, they won't understand what that craft and the glow, if you want to call it that. I'm not sure what it is. I mean, you'd have to see it for yourself and slowly study it and replay it a few times to truly understand like what's going on. It is so strange.
It is. If you look at a close-up of what seems to be a cluster of balloons, and then the cluster of balloons has an internal light source, there's energy being given off. It changes shape. There's so much to these videos, but the whole point behind having Jeff on is it's an antidote, if you will, to all this drones over New Jersey kind of thing.
Yeah.
He's been videotaping this stuff for so long now in broad daylight. And there's been a harassment or unfair bit of harassment and surveillance as a direct result of it. And one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on, John, myself, you're a student of history. We just had a brief chat where we started about the geopolitical scene. What's your take on what's happened just since Trump's inauguration, domestically, foreign policy, and where it's headed? Because there's definitely factions, two sides of the same coin, arguably, that definitely want to continue war with Ukraine, which is just insane. But now they want to seemingly spread the wealth. There's another faction that wants to have war with Iran in furtherance of what General Wesley Clark talked about some time ago now. A certain span of time, there's going to be seven countries that are going to be taken over, destabilized, destroyed, right? And the last one on that list is Iran. So what are your thoughts on all that?
Well, I want to hear you say a little bit about what I'm going to say. But in Dealey Plaza, after the act was completed and Kennedy was outed and Johnson was in, this was an American coup. This was a coup, a transfer of power. And the edicts and the foreign policies and such changed extremely rapidly. The course of America changed after that November date. Could have went one way and then it went another. Now we have Trump winning the election, Biden out, Trump in. Trump comes in, there's no shots that have been fired, no one's been killed, there's no summary executions, snipers, or anything like that. But boy, has he really done a number with the speed and the volume, the weight, the changes that he has done throughout the federal government of the United States. And, you know, a lot of people are saying it was an unfair 2-on-1 when Zelensky came into the Oval Office and Vance and Trump jumped on him and Zelensky reacted to it, ordered him out of the White House. Zelensky could have kept his mouth shut, but he wanted to go back and forth with a guy like Trump's like a Steinbrenner, right? He doesn't like something, he's going to open his mouth up and change it. And he dropped a guillotine. And from that point, too, I don't want to get ahead myself because I want to go back to the changes that are happening in the United States and how fast things have changed. Zelensky runs back and then has this automatic photo op set up with the EU, James.
Yeah, and even before he met with Trump, it turned out that he was being advised, so-called, by the likes of Victoria Nuland and people like that, these neocons that have these Ukrainian roots who've been wanting to start World War III with the Russians. And that's a violation of the Logan Act. So they should prosecute Nolan and others who've been giving this bad advice to Zelensky after the inauguration, because that's a no-no. But please continue.
What are your opinion? What's your counter opinion about what I said? How, and I don't want to consider what has happened in the United States necessarily bad, but for only being in office, I'll say for 1 month, okay, about 6 weeks, January 20th, and here we are speaking on March 5th. I haven't seen an American president act so quickly before in doing things.
I'm a glass half full kind of guy. I'll take the good with the bad. However much good is ladled out there, I'll take it. Because compared to what it was like under the Biden-Obama regime, which was just sheer lunacy and madness, and the legacy after effects of that, all the DEI hires and the airlines and the FAA, everything else. And, you know, we're still going to have a fallout from that because you just have all these unqualified whack job people in these positions of influence and power that don't belong there. And also the cleaning of the house of the Pentagon, which was long overdue. These were things that needed to be done. I have no qualms about them. Yes, you know, I take the good with the bad and I have a zoomed out perspective. I think eventually they're gearing up for a war with Iran, which may be brought about by false flags, and we'll have to wait and see about that. And also, they're opening a whole new front with the so-called war on the cartels, which that's a double-edged sword. We know that the CIA, Mossad, elements of military intelligence have been working in unison with these drug lords and narco states for a long, long time at the highest levels of the government and the military of Honduras, Guatemala, Argentina, all these countries, Colombia, all these countries where the cocaine and the other drugs and increasingly over the years, heroin has been coming from, elements of the deep state have been working with them and organized crime. So it'll be similar in a way to the Vietnam War. I'd like your take on this, John, because people were saying, eyewitnesses that were part of the Vietnam War were saying, we barely made our plans. We just left a briefing tent, and Radio Hanoi is already talking about what we're planning to do. This is what some of the Marines were saying along the DMZ. That's just one example. When you have this concept of going after the cartels, when you consider corrupt countries like Mexico and the highest levels of the government, highest levels of the law enforcement, police, and the military are up to their eyeballs in drug trafficking, and those are supposed to be your allies, well, I could see another disaster. I'll take the good with the bad. If they knock off, they'll probably allow certain drug traffickers to be thrown under the bus, just like with this whole Epstein thing. Ultimately, they might throw a couple of small fry under the bus. But generally, these so-called cartels make so much money, black money, for the intelligence community, and they launder so much money through the banking system. The banks want this. Black ops wants this.
You're 100. Everything that you're saying is...
So please, I like your thoughts on that.
Just to throwing in there, if anybody has seen the movie Scarface, and in the middle part of it, when Tony Montana suddenly is now becoming a little bit of a bigger player, the Miami cop comes into him in the nightclub and says, "We need to sit down and talk now, Tony." He knows he's dealing cocaine, okay? And he said that this is the amount that you're going to pay me each month. They never tell you how much the amount, because he writes it down on a napkin and shows it to him and puts it back underneath the table. So he never verbally states it. The cop, but Tony says, "That's a lot of money." And Tony says, "Annual?" The guy goes, "No, monthly." And he goes, "Well, what do I get for that?" And then the cop tells him, he said, "When somebody's not paying their bills, we're going to take care of it for you, Tony." He goes, "I got 7 guns and we're not going to ask any questions, or we're going to go in there and knock those guys out." He goes, "And Tony, the only thing I want of it, you throw me a small fish every once in a while so I can get my name in the headlines." And so it wasn't Oliver, Brian De Palma did that movie. And Miami's built on coke money. I've heard that for you. Like, everybody knows that it's laundered money, all those high rises and everything like that. So this game is old, right, James?
Yes, in the confluence of the financial sector, organized crime, intelligence, and I really encourage people like yourself. I watch some of these podcasters, ex-Special Forces guys. Some of them are kind of switched on, in many ways similar to UFO witnesses from the military. They have a pension to protect. They want to keep their mouth shut about certain issues. So probably some of them know about false flags. Probably some of them know about CIA involvement with international drug trafficking. But some of these Special Forces influencers, especially some of their commentators that chime in on their YouTube channels, they're just like flag-waving idiots. I mean, they have no clue as to the history of this. And as a primer, I'd encourage people, this book that I'm going to mention should be in everyone's personal library, The Secret Team by the late, great Air Force Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty. He was the focal point man in the Air Force when the CIA, this is in the 50s, when the CIA needed...
I read that book.
Yes, it's a classic book.
Yeah, it's expensive, too.
Yeah, it's hard to find these days. Yeah. It's like a lot of the great books of the past, hard to find. But
yeah,
he was the real-life version, the real-life model for the Donald Sutherland character in the Oliver Stone movie JFK. And also, he was a UFO truth-teller. People don't know about that either.
No, I didn't know that, James.
But Fletcher Prouty was the point man. So when the CIA needed aerial support, aerial resupply, communication support, whatever the case may be, anywhere in the world, he was the one that they went to, and they pitched the idea to him. He would take it from there. And he pointed out in his book, Secret Team, that what the CIA has done for so long is they have actual CIA officers, operatives, disguised as military people. Take a look at a guy, by all outward appearances, that's a Green Beret colonel, that's an Air Force colonel, that's an Army general. No, they really work for the CIA. And when people balk at that idea, I remind them that the CIA is based on the OSS, which was...
What about Oswald, James?
Yeah, what's that?
You're talking about Oswalds, and they're freaking everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, yeah.
So you have all these people, in outward appearance, military, but they're really CIA, and it doesn't stop.
Right.
Because there are CIA people embedded into the FAA, Federal Aviation Administration. So say if you have a drug trafficking route and you have a FAA/CIA supervisor and then an underling comes along, we keep getting these transponders of these weird flights coming in and out of Miami and the Everglades.
To ignore it.
Yeah, exactly. They're embedded in there, and then they have a brief to ignore that stuff, cover up that stuff. This includes UFOs too, right?
I mean, James, it would be the only way that it could work.
Yes. If you look at it from that standpoint, they're going to wage war and it's going to spill over into the mainland, because you brought up the Tony Montana character. That was brilliant.
Yeah.
Because so many of the problems were caused by these so-called anti-Castro CIA-trained Cubans, right?
Right, the Alpha 66, yeah.
Alpha 66, all that. The problems, and this is what DEA people who really wanted to get them, of course, the DEA itself is essentially an undercover arm of the CIA. That's another thing that people have to understand. There are elements from this, within DEA that are controlled by the CIA. And so you have all these CIA-trained Cubans, when they're not conducting raids, trying to destroy sugarcane fields and blow up radio stations in Cuba or bringing down airlines, right? They're running drugs. And the problem that the real anti-drug trafficking people in the federal government had, these guys are CIA-trained. They're trained to sneak into Cuba, a harsh, extremely surveilled country, raise havoc, and then leave. And they took those same tactics and mindset in the drug trafficking, which made it so difficult. And then they link with drug traffickers in Central America and South America.
I was going to say, then they copy that and they use it in Panama, El Salvador, Honduras. I mean, you know,
all those countries. And then you throw in the, you know, the Mossad Israeli military training teams that are throughout Latin America, you know, training up the militaries of Honduras, of Argentina. And by extension, if you go to some of these special forces podcaster channels I was talking about, they're just now catching on to the fact that some of these cartels, so-called, they're led and advised and trained by ex-Delta Force, ex-U.S. Special Forces. That stuff has been going on all along. It's not a new thing.
Absolutely.
So I just like your thoughts on that, too.
I've heard, like, I'm not in the mob. I'm not in the intelligence agencies. But if you were pointed it out when you were just talking here, everything has to be intertwined, James. The intelligence agencies, I heard that, like, Las Vegas is basically a CIA hub.
Yeah, I could definitely see that because they're linking with the bomb. Yeah.
51 is right there. And it's like everything crosses up. The drug trade and gambling. I'm not laughing about it. The intel in the UFO is one, James.
You look back to David Ferry. You talk about a guy with like a big skill set, and you know, for evil, malign purposes, a pedo on top of everything else.
Right.
He was a financial advisor to Carlos Marcello, of all people.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and you look at a guy like Paul Halliwell with the OSS, later with the CIA. He operated out of first in communist China during World War II, the so-called Dixie Mission, then China. And then later on, he became caught up in all the stuff that was going on in the Golden Triangle and in Southeast Asia. He winds up being a financial advisor, conciliary type for Santos Trafficante Jr., right? The major Tampa drug kingpin. And then you look at the linkage of people like Theodore Shackley, the late unlimited. He was a CIA station chief in Laos during all the drug smuggling. And, you know, with cases like Laos, Vietnam, and other conflicts, is it a case where, like, a war was used as a cover for drug trafficking? Like what came first, the chicken or the egg? Was it
drug trafficking?
And then when you go back to the French, you know, the French military intelligence, they were trafficking with the Corsicans, right?
Right.
I mean, so, yeah, please continue.
So, I mean, the wet dream is this, James, right? You want to fly the guns in, empty the aircraft full of drugs, and bring it back.
And that's exactly what happened.
You make it both. Yeah, you don't want to have it. Why have an empty plane flying back when we can make another $1 billion when it comes back? So we're going to have it going both ways, James.
There's going to be internecine warfare because there are fiefdoms carved out by, just take a country like Mexico, corrupt to the core. So there's going to be regions where the local police chiefs, the local military regional commanders have their own setup, the narco lords and the drug traffickers there. And then you have the more major setup with the larger, more profitable groups, definitely run by the CIA and working in conjunction with the Mexican government, for example, and the Mexican cartels. So to get rid of competition, they may say, okay, well, get rid of this other group. They don't want to join with us. They don't want to do what we want them to do. They're cutting into our profits. So they're going to steer the American military effort against the small fry, right? But these small fry aren't going to want to go away quietly because they, you know, they have a big stake in this. It may seem like small fry money to the big cartels, but we're talking millions and millions of dollars. So they're going to fight it out. So there's going to be warfare between elements of the Mexican government, Mexican military, Mexican law enforcement. And we'll see that even some of those groups will be advised by
it. In the U.S. press, it could be painted as America is doing its war on drugs.
Yes. And this whole anti-drug war, counter-drug operations, and then from an American law enforcement perspective, this goes back to Operation Alliance. A lot of this stuff was based out of Fort Bliss, El Paso, Texas. And we talked about earlier, the Drug Enforcement Agency, how it's essentially controlled by the CIA. If people were to take the time to read the books by Michael Levine, undercover DEA operative, in his books Deep Cover, he was infiltrating the Bolivian cocaine growers and drug smugglers. And then in his next book, The Big White Lie, he was going in after the Colombians. There was a woman there who was like the biggest Colombian trafficker. It was Levine's view. And this comes out also in the one novel he wrote, which is a brilliant novel. The whole worldwide effort is coordinated by the CIA. He's not the only ex-DEA operative saying that. And then you have a guy like...
James, neither of us could back this up, nor do we know what the truth is. But it certainly seems like Manuel Noriega was in bed at one point in time with George Bush Sr.
Well, absolutely, because his...
I mean, how much more do you need than that, James?
Well, his boss, Omar Torrijos, who was the president before him, he was Torrijos' head of intelligence, G2. And as such, he essentially ran... helped run the drug trade out of the various airports there, airfields in Panama, because people have to remember, Panama was carved off of Colombia. Colombia used to control what we now know as Panama, but Wall Street instigated a coup in order to gain control of what became Panama so they can control the Panama Canal and everything else, but also to control the drug trade. So Omar Torrijos was the dictator of Panama. His older brother, Moises Torrijos, was a major drug trafficker, and some of Moises Torrijos' underlings were caught red-handed in America, bringing in a huge load of cocaine. But pressure was applied, as happens so often, as what Mike Levine and others have pointed out. So many of these major drug traffickers are regarded as CIA intelligence assets, and they always get a free pass.
Absolutely.
So the point I made earlier about the CIA agents in disguise, I can easily see, as was the case in the bogus war on terror. It wasn't bogus from the standpoint of the casualties and killing and maiming, but the whole concept behind it and the underhanded deception behind it. Who was giving the taskings? Who was deciding who was a high-value target or not? Well, it was these CIA-type people. And so the same thing is going to happen where it'll, by all outward appearances, it'll seem like it's a DEA or it's Army Green Beret, somebody or other, giving orders, but really it'll be a CIA guy. And they're going to be sending these special forces units after drug lords and kingpins that are expendable, that they're going to throw under the bus. But as far as the big major players, no, they're not going to be able to bring them down because the black ops community and the banks profit from it and organized crime profits from it. They're not going to want that to go away.
I listened to an interview with Maria Oswald, Lee Harvey's wife, and she said she met Lee Harvey Oswald, it wasn't in Moscow. I forget where he was when he was in Russia. I forgot what city, and it's not even important. She said that when Lee Harvey Oswald told her in perfect Russian that he was an American, she and all her friends laughed and said, "You're not," because his dress, his mannerisms, and she said, specifically looked in the camera and said, his mastery of the slang. The slang part of the language they refused that he could be an American. What's the point? Why am I bringing this up? One of these people could be standing next to you, James, and you would never know about it.
And that's the point that L. Fletcher Prouty pointed out, that the CIA, embedded CIA operatives, they're everywhere. They're everywhere.
Yes.
He made the point in his book that General Maxwell Taylor, we know him as one of the commanders of the 101st Airborne. It's a whole interesting story how he even got into the picture and wound up commanding the 101st. Because the founder of the 101st, General Lee, he had a heart attack and couldn't command, so they stuck Taylor in there, and that opened up his career to the point he becomes chief of staff, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff during the Kennedy administration. And what L. Fletcher Prouty said was General Maxwell Taylor was a CIA agent. So the very guy that they put in charge as the chairman of the Joint Chiefs and the policies of Vietnam, Southeast Asia, et cetera, he's a CIA guy.
Stunning to hear that. And I've already said it in another, just 15 minutes ago. It's like, James, it couldn't be any other way but that. Complete control. They have to have complete control. For them to have complete control, the guy that you think is, I don't want to call him a good guy, but the guy who says, I want the order to be this and to be that, he is nothing but a hand puppet, James.
Yes. And then if you look at they always talk about the cartel wars, the Cali cartel against the Medellin cartel.
Yeah.
CIA had their hooks into both of them, right? And then that's where the Barry Seal story comes in. And then people really need, all these ex-Special Forces peoples in their podcast, they really need to understand who Barry Seal was. What does Hollywood do? They turn him into Tom Cruise. I didn't even bother watching that movie. Barry Seal.
What was the name of that really good Barry Seal book?
Well, Dan Hopsicker wrote a good book, Barry and the Boys.
That's the one.
Yes.
And it's got a photo of all those guys that's in black and white, and they're sitting at the table, and they look like a bunch of mobsters.
Yeah, they look like a bunch of mobsters. I was in Mexico City somewhere where some of those were active CIA guys. I think Felix is one of the people. So the point being is Barry Seal, they keep talking about it as being a sting of the Medellin cartel. No, he was running drugs. All major players, Jorge Ochoa, et cetera, they were on the CIA payroll.
One of those guys who were sitting at the table was hired and led the group to go down to Bolivia and kill Che Guevara.
Now, that was Felix Rodriguez, another...
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, infamous drug trafficker. He ran Ilopango Airport out of El Salvador, where so many drugs were being flown in and out of. So that's where, you brought up Noriega earlier. Noriega, he was taking too big of a cut, was part of his problem. As far as the drug trade was concerned. And this goes back to Operation Watchtower, CIA, Green Beret operations to bring drugs in from Colombia, fly them into Panama, and then fly them out of the Canal Zone Airport there, Howard Air Force Base. That's the problem a lot of these special forces are going to have. Because you see in these podcasts, they're cheerleading, oh, now we got Delta Force, we're going to send them in there to deal with the cartels. Never mind that ex-Delta guys are training some of these cartels, right?
Right.
Along with the Mossad, along with the CIA advisors and the military contractors. If you look at it from that standpoint, that Barry Seal was not an anomaly. He was ex-Special Forces. He was in the same Civil Air Patrol group as David Ferry and Lee Harvey
Oswald.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So, the same network, and he trafficked drugs out of Southeast Asia, the same groups out of Southeast Asia, Richard Secord, Theodore Shackley, when he was head of station of CIA of Laos and then Saigon, that whole group was transferred. They were in Miami, and then they sent them off to Southeast Asia, then they sent them back to Latin America, and it's the same network. That's what they're going to be dealing with, is the fact that so many of their foes in this drug war are going to be CIA-controlled intelligence assets. And the war is going to get bloody. If they thought, now Mogadishu was bad, but if they thought that was bad, just being assailed from all sides by hordes of these Somalis wielding AK-47s,
right
until they try to clear out a place like Ciudad de Juarez, well, not only the cartels have been trained by special forces, but the military and the law enforcement likewise have been trained.
I've heard, James, and I can't back this up, two real quick things that ex-Spentaz Russian commandos.
Spentaz,
high on the bidding list of the cartels, that they want to get them into the group as trainers. And then the other guys that get are electronic warfare jamming and intercept specialists out of the Russian military.
Well, yes, because, this goes back decades now, the dissolution of the Soviet Union, breakup of the Warsaw Pact. So many of those special operators, QGB operatives, GRU, Spetsnaz operators, they needed a new job to the point
Correct.
where, you know, the so-called Russian mob, they had the money to buy a submarine to facilitate their drug trafficking. They were selling on the black market tactical nukes. And
Kitty, if anybody is hearing you and I talk right now, let them go ahead for the next 2 years, the next year of go ahead and click into the Drudge Report or the New York Times or whoever you want and count how many major into the tonnage of drug busts are made in the United States of America. There's none, James.
Once in a while, they'll make a big deal.
Yes. Once in a while. You thank you very much. That's a great way of putting it.
Just to make it seem like the DEA is doing their job. But
thank you.
If you read John Dinges' book, it's called Our Man in Panama, about Noriega. In the very first chapter, Dinges talks about this cocaine lab in the jungles of Panama run by the Colombians. Noriega, who normally protects this kind of thing, for whatever reason, he sends his forces in there and they break up this jungle cocaine factory. Well, what do they do? See, they got it ready for production, but they hadn't started producing yet. But all the chemicals were there and you know, the labs were all set up. And Noriega's forces go in there, they bust these people. And then they literally fly them back to Colombia, all the people that set up that drug factory in the jungle, and they walk off the plane like tourists back into their home country.
James, am I right or wrong? Isn't this kind of shown in the Tom Clancy movie, Clear and Present Danger?
Yes, because in that story, even though Clancy was an establishment figure, you know, some truth...
Right, but they show it on the big screen.
Yeah, so truth did manage to come out. Now, the silliness at the end where the Harrison Ford character is testifying in Congress against
right.
the administration, that's just silliness. You always see in these movies, the FBI
but
always writes it.
About the William Defoe character being the forward air controller to wipe out that to wipe out that cartel guy off of a, what was it, an F-18 or a Hornet that came off a carrier deck and they did a...
Well, yeah, you talk about collateral damage, drop a JDAM.
Exactly.
Right outside this house where women and children are, and not just
exactly.
So, but that's an example of them
right on the big screen for everyone to see.
People have to understand that these sting operations that Barry Seal was involved in, which even Reagan talked about, made a big deal, giving a press conference out of the Oval Office and talking about the sting operation where they prove that the Nicaraguan Sandinistas were working in collusion with the Medellin cartel. That's completely backwards to reality. Because it was, as you know, it was the Contras that were against the Sandinista regime who were doing the major drug trafficking that were working with the Colombians. People really have to plug into that information. All the information from the CIA Contra drug wars, there's so many books written by Peter Dale Scott, Jonathan Marshall, and all these ex-intelligence guys.
Is it James Webb? Who's the guy who died that wrote the book about the crack coming into the United States?
Oh, Gary Webb, Dark Alliance.
Gary Webb, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that book is a primer because the biggest Contra drug traffickers, Danilo Blandón was one of them, they were CIA-protected assets. Not only were they bringing loads of cocaine, and they found a distributor in Freeway Ricky Ross, the biggest dealer in Los Angeles, but they were bringing in arms, too, which eventually led to the civil war between all these black gangs in America.
They said, I've watched this documentary, I didn't realize that even the rap music got altered, so they had their own soundtrack. They had their own drug soundtrack, the civil war soundtrack, the Crips were fighting the blood. It was just all shaped and molded to like fit the time. And what were they doing? Absolutely, positively wiping out and eradicating the inner city African-Americans, James.
Yes, they were, because I can see the switch in the music industry, largely working through the influence or manipulated puppets in sports. We see the same thing, the emasculation of the black man, the utter degradation of the music. I mean, I'm an old school rocker guy, but I wasn't one of these old school rockers who just turn my nose up at other genres of music. No, not only did I like classic hard rock and R&B, but I mean, you go back to Motown, then you fast forward a little bit, and then you got Otis Redding and Aretha Franklin, the Earth, Wind & Fire. I loved all that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you talk about love songs. Look what's happened to the black music scene since then. They're everything but love, just gangster rap, and it's been like that for a long time. So you
How
see the
pure
conflict.
and honest was that 70s AM music, James, from say 72 to 76?
Yeah, that was the good
People
old days.
singing from the heart. I don't want to pull one guy out, but Gordon Lightfoot. Gordon Lightfoot wasn't doing anything but writing music, James.
Well, that guy was a sage.
You listen to his music, and it's almost like it transmutes you into another dimension, for Christ's sake.
I was just listening to some of his music yesterday on Spotify.
Oh, wow.
You're right. It just, you know, Paul Simon, there were so many others, too.
Yes. Yeah.
They actually wrote things that made you think, whereas
thank you.
The music that, well, what passes for music, especially in the Black community leaders, the real ones, will tell you this, too, that the ghetto culture has destroyed the Black community. I would agree. It's
right.
Feminism, too, the Black iteration of it. Has absolutely destroyed the Black community. There's no doubt of, because 70%+ of all Black babies are born into single mother households.
Think they're going to get proper education and proper food, James?
No, the odds of that are slim and none. The notion that these baby mamas are going to sit around going over the ABCs and reading children's stories to their brood, that's far-fetched.
That's correct.
So,
and you're going to feed them something out of the microwave.
Yeah, out of the microwave. And you talked about the music earlier and how it ties into the whole drug scene. You look at this whole East-West rapper war. You cannot find a parallel with that in any other genre of music. It's like the folk singers in the East Coast of America against the folk singers of the... it doesn't happen.
It's like the whole thing was shaped and manipulated to be like... to be chaotic and destructive and ugly and drug-filled and have the lowest vibration that it possibly could. And then it spread like wildfire, James.
Well, yes. Well, what they found out, because by creating crack, they had a ready-made derivative, which was dirt cheap.
Yeah.
You know, like what, back then, $5 or $10, a couple of rocks, and, you know.
Right,
you smoke
right.
It and you get high. I don't know. I never... even thought.
Yeah, I didn't do that either. Yeah.
But the fact that it was became so inexpensive. So
yes.
What they did was every Black family has relatives in St. Louis and Atlanta, everywhere else. So quickly, the cocaine spread from Los Angeles and Miami to all points in between.
Right.
And people have to understand that was a direct outgrowth. We keep hearing about rogue elements of the CIA, rogue elements of the... No. A lot of this came straight from the National Security Council. A lot of it straight from the State Department. A lot of these humanitarian NGOs, they call them NGOs now, these humanitarian foundations raising money for the Contras for humanitarian purposes. And you remember the Boland Amendment specifically forbade lethal aid to the Contras. So what they did was, and setting aside all the profits from the drug cartels and the drug trafficking, which... came about as a result of the CIA Contra war. Just the funding that came down from the State Department was used for arms trafficking and for drug trafficking. We keep hearing about USAID now, but that's been going on for a long, long time. So that's who these military people are going to be fighting against. It's an entrenched system, entrenched within the U.S. government, entrenched within the British government, entrenched within all the countries in Latin America, the military, law enforcement, intelligence services. You look at Honduras, a classic example. It was just a big drug country is what it was. And the airfields in Honduras, it was where they were flying in and out a lot of the drug trafficking. The head of intelligence of the Honduran military during the CIA Contra days was a major drug trafficker. And then they had this...
I got something that I want to tell. I want to drop a bomb. I was an air traffic controller tower chief operator at Palmarola Air Base in Honduras for over 10 months.
That's news to me, but please continue.
Oh, well, I was there from 84 to 85. This is the height of the Iran-Contra war. The Sandinista versus Contra. So,
yeah.
Sorry about that. All air logistics. So Palmarola Air Base was the... largest military air base in Honduras. It was the home of the Honduran Air Force. So where their Air Force Academy was, and their landing strip became the taxiway, and the 82nd Airborne in Combat Engineers came in and put a brand new runway, which still exists today, And it was long enough, James, to be an alternative landing site for the space shuttle.
Yeah, I remember that because
I was there the entire time when that was built from A to Z. I partied with those guys, played volleyball and football with them. There were plenty of times when there were UH-1 Huey helicopters. Prior to going there, I had a VHS copy of Apocalypse Now. Okay. And then it was so weird how in your life, one thing could be you're watching it on television and then suddenly you are it. So I was in this base where I'm launching Huey helicopters. We're picking up, bringing back wounded soldiers. And then there are also supply. And I also went on ammunition run, James, where I two times dropped off ammunition. And to say that we were close to the border, well, I actually talked to the pilots because the areas that we were in, there was a river that denoted the border between Honduras and Nicaragua. And you know that rivers change, James. One minute it could be 100 yards this way, then there's a washout, and it could be 100 yards that way. You know exactly what I'm talking about, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So the pilot said that we were inside Nicaragua.
Well, you look at Eugene Asenfuss.
The ammunition off. We were on the wrong side of the river. So do you know how many of my friends know this story?
Not many.
Zero.
Yeah.
I didn't come home. I didn't tell anyone anything. When I came back home from what I saw there, this is my first admittance that I was part of this at all. Under the guise of only making sure. Their CH-47 helicopters and UH-1 helicopters, where they were running their supplies points out to. We gave them clearance direct there and back. And so being on the flight line and being in the control tower and having a pair of military binoculars, I could see what was being unloaded and unloaded, but where they were going, who was on board. And you got to file flight plan. So we knew when they were coming back, of course, right, James? So some of those helicopters never came back, James.
And the Hondurans military, they represented the so-called Northern Front, as you know, of the Contra War. The Southern Front was Costa Rica, and the CIA had hooks into both of them because the CIA had the FDN in Honduras, and then they had the group in Costa Rica.
I saw their flags, so I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
And all these Contra leaders were coincidentally drug traffickers. So, I mean, you have the Costa Rican operation flown out of John Hull's ranch. John Hull was a CIA operative that was flying all this cocaine off of his ranch. And then you have Honduras, where you have the head of intelligence, the head of the military. They were all major drug traffickers. And the way that they operated was they started at the very beginning, the 1980 cocaine coup in Bolivia. Klaus Barbie, of all people, the Butcher of Lyon, he was a first Army Counterintelligence Corps asset after World War II, and then he became a CIA asset. He literally recruits a bunch of Nazis. You know the story. They literally have Nazi swastika armbands, and then they instigate a coup, and they bring in the two biggest drug traffickers who run the country as politicians. The Minister of the Interior was the largest Bolivian coca grower in the country.
Right.
That's how they do it. The people that are the biggest traffickers, they install them as presidents, as the foreign minister, the military, and the chief of police, and that's who these people are going to be fighting.
Just in case, James, anybody who just heard you said that, if they're rolling their eyes and they think that that is preposterous, tell them to go watch the movie Scarface. Because at the end of the movie, they finger all of these government officials in Bolivia who are the highest government officials being the ones that are running the cocaine.
The fact that the CIA was working closely with both the major cartels, the Medellin and the Cali cartel, deeply embedded. So they get it from the ground zero, where you have the Bolivians who grow, and then they have the jungle factories, they create the paste. And then the Colombians said, well, you know, we could do that too. So they began having their own jungle factories where they would take the coca leaf, this wicked cocktail of chemicals, and then they would make the paste, and from that they would make the powder. So the Colombians started getting in on the coca growing aspect of it as well. So much of it was flowing out of Honduras. And also the foreign aid that was coming in. Now get this, that you know this is a fact. What people don't realize is what the CIA and the Pentagon did, a lot of times was they use the Argentinians a lot of times too. When people look at pictures of the Argentinian military, and man, these guys look, these are almost like German Wehrmacht type uniforms, you know? Well, there's a reason for
yes.
that. Because
yes.
the Argentinians, by ethnicity, many of the ruling elite, they're Italians. And so a lot of them came from fascisti, Mussolini era Italy. And they were the model for Hitler's, you know, the Schutzstaffel and black shirts, what have you. The black shirts under Mussolini were the model basically for Hitler's SS and stormtroopers. And if you look at a guy like Otto Skorzeny, put the O in special operations in World War II, studying SAS reports, and then he came out and formed his own SS Special Forces Unit. Well, he was absolved of any wrongdoing in World War II, and he quickly became an advisor for a number of countries in Egypt and other countries. But he settled down in Argentina, where he trained the Argentinian military and special forces. What's that?
Where was Adolf Galland became the head of the South American Air Force where?
Well, probably Argentina, because it's...
That's what I thought. So, yeah. Again, everything you are saying is 100% correct.
And the point of relevance is that look at the Argentine military. Then they have, you know, Operation Condor, where the Argentinians and the Chileans, they liaise with the militaries and secret services of Uruguay and Bolivia and Brazil. And they all just hunted each other's dissidents and assassinated them and tortured them. And all the desaparecidos, all the people that disappeared from all those countries, right? That was all part of this tied in with the World Anti-Communist League, you know, run by John Singlob, ex-OSS, ex-Special Operations Group out of Southeast Asia, right? He was a big part of this. And it ties in. And this is where the Freemasonic connection, the P2 Lodge, comes in. Because P2 was based out of Italy, Agnelli, all those people at a very high level involved with P2. Well, P had a connection with Argentina, with Honduras, right? And so point being is that you have these Argentinian advisors who dress up like Germans, basically, some of them were actually trained by Otto Skorzeny. And they're going to places like Honduras, Guatemala. And before the Sandinistas took over Nicaragua, they were trading Somozas, National Guard. Like a big chunk of what became the Contras was Somozas National Guard guardsmen who were anti-communist. So you have all this training being given by the Mossad, by the CIA, by the Pentagon, and by the Argentinians, who are steeped German military Prussian-style tactics. So this is many generations ago now. This war that's happening, already starting against the cartels, they're coming up against an embedded institution that has been trained up by special forces and by Western intelligence for a long time. And the people that find out about this along the way, they're going to get accidented, suicided, disappeared, whatever the case may be. This is what we saw in the Iran-Contra days. So many of the lower, middle-ranking guys, if they were lucky, they were thrown in jail and they just cut their mouth shut and they'd be let out after a while. But a lot of the lower level guys, like Barry Seal, wasn't really a lower level guy. They bumped him off and they blamed it on Colombian hit squads. But he was bumped off by the CIA, it's clear. So that's what they're going to have to deal with. Final thoughts, I know we've been going all over the place, but this is the war front that people have to be aware of. I'm going to do a commentary about this.
Let's do one final thing, and we could just cover it for a minute or two.
Please.
What's your opinion of what is going to out? What will be the reality of the war in Ukraine in the next year?
Well, we know that all those bioweapons labs are there. I even spoke to my lab, who told me that there's genetics labs underneath there in Ukraine, where they're growing all kinds of weird chimeras that elements of NATO are involved in and know about it. See, they still want this war to continue, despite the fact that the Ukrainian military is shot through. They're literally press-ganging young males off the street. And now they're openly talking about using the military of England. And that's a non-starter, but that can only lead to a disaster at a time when the UK is inundated by these dagger-wielding fanatics from Dagestan. Gee, what was the war on terror all about? To keep them there instead of them coming over here. Wasn't that part of the agenda, right? No, it wasn't. The plan all along was to have the West inundated by these savages. So that's exactly what's happening. And then while their countries are being overrun by these dagger-wielding, machete-wielding savages, and protected by the government, by the way, they're going to send the flower of the youth off to fight in Ukraine. It's
for some
insane,
worthless war that shouldn't even be happening.
Yes. So all these tariff wars that are happening, China is coming to the fore again as far as international news is concerned, and they're saber rattling. They're openly saying they're going to take over Taiwan at some point, which is going to be the doom of the American Pacific Fleet when that happens. So we just got to see how it plays out, my friend. I'm so glad that you're in this struggle with this, and thank you for being there all this time. And
no, thank you.
Being a good sounding board and being a good friend all this time. I've known John Franklin for 15-plus years, and great conversations about...
Yeah, too. Even our small email exchanges back and forth are super valuable.
Yes, and you've sent me a great number of links over the years of this, that, or the other kind of information that's really beneficial to me. So
I know you appreciate it, and you're the type that'll absorb it.
Thank you. And part two is coming up. Listen, because John delves into a lot of stuff related to, from his MyLab perspective, orbs. What they've done is they've used euphemisms and they've used a narrative. You notice how the UFO Congress hearings have been kicked to the curb because the drones came in, right? And that's why I had Jeff Brady on the show to dismiss that whole notion that these are all drones. Well,
right.
A term that's become synonymous with drones is orbs. And that's a lot to unpack because it's not just a simple thing, oh, that represents some plasma consciousness. Well, you know, some of that does, right? But it goes much deeper because some of those so-called orbs are high-tech devices from one or more civilizations, super
advanced
civilizations. And John gets into that in part two. So anyhow, John, thank you so much for coming on to the Cosmic Switchboard Short. I definitely want to have you again.
Thank you, James. God bless all the hard work you're doing.
Thank you. And to our dear listeners out there, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top in the next segment.